you, Dr. Carter, and thank you for that warm reception. I appreciate it. I really appreciate the opportunity to talk with you today, and as Carlisle mentioned, we're going to leave some time at the end so that we'll have a chance to talk about issues on your mind, too. Part of my coming here is to learn from you about what directions we need to go in. The theme of your conference is, coincidentally and fortunately, just the theme that we're working towards in community college, NCA, cooperation, and that is to build bridges, not to set up and build walls, break down walls and build bridges. That is absolutely the most critical thing we have to do. You also heard mentioned that we're engaged in an academic reform effort. I've been with the NCAA about 5 years now, and that is, in fact, my mission. The change that took place in intercollegiate athletics really began to pick up steam in 1991. That was when the Knight Commission, a reform group from the newspaper, Niagara Newspapers, a reform group, talked about the need to change intercollegiate athletics to make sure that it really becomes integrated part of higher education. And so in 1991, if you ever want to read something that a little dull, but really important, read that Knight Commission report, and it is on the web, as everything else is. And you'll see that the main points they made, which in fact have come true, are that we need to better understand the relationship between athletics and intercollegiate athletics. But we also need to get presidential leadership. And indeed, that was probably the most important change in intercollegiate athletics that began in 91, though it took some time, frankly, to be realized. And so when I was appointed in 2003, that was a culmination of a long process of presidents on their campuses throughout the country, in conferences and individually, getting control. And so as a president of the university, I was appointed to the NCAA presidency with the mission, again, to integrate athletics and intercollegiate athletics. I did not have to be convinced that that was important. If you ask the question, why do we engage in sports, into intercollegiate athletics at all at universities? We're the only country in the world that does that. You know, in every other country in Europe and Asia, there is a real desire to separate out sports and education. They have a club system, which is semi-pro and eventually pro for 18 to 20-year-olds and so on. Why do we do it the way we do it? I think because we understand, frankly, better than others, the role that athletics plays in the education of our youth. This is the key point. Sports has educational value. Now, anyone who thinks that all college is about is going to lecture laboratories and the libraries doesn't know the first thing about a college or a two-year education. Don't get me wrong, that's very important. I've been a faculty member, professor of philosophy for 40 years, and I still hold that rank and I still teach. So don't get me wrong that I don't think that's important. It's the core of why you go to school. But when we send our young people to college, we expect them to learn more than what's in the lecture hall and in the books. We expect them to develop attitudes, points of view, perspectives, and character that will lead them through their lives, that will stay with them throughout. We don't teach that in the classroom. I teach about ethics, different ethical systems when I teach philosophical ethics courses. I don't teach ethics. You learn ethics by being ethical, and you learn ethics by example and mentorship and participating. And there are a number of ways within higher education to accomplish that. You can be on student government. You can go to lots of lectures on campus and participate in political activity. You can be in the symphony orchestra or the marching band, and you can do athletics. And my view is that nothing does it better than athletics. The relationship you have as a student athlete, and you don't have to be an elite athlete, and you don't have to be a star, but the relationship you have by participating in athletics is that you learn teamwork and hard work, you learn persistence, you learn to pursue excellence, you learn to pick yourself off the floor. We find more and more, and the counselors and advisors in this group will certainly know this, but we find more and more that students are having difficulty, anxiety about entering into institutions. That it's more and more difficult for them to persist, particularly when they've been successful in the past in high school, and all of a sudden they're facing challenges. And that ability to persist is critical. So what happens when a student athlete loses a game on Saturday? On Monday, the coach says, let's pick ourselves up, get ready for the next game. They know how to persist. We know that that bondedness with the institution is a factor in success in college. We know from longitudinal studies of Sandy Aston, for example, at UCLA, we know from 40 to 50 years of longitudinal studies that the most important time for a young person in college is the first semester, I'd say the first 6 weeks. Unless they can be connected to the institution, alienation develops. And while they may not leave at that moment if they feel alienated from the institution, it comes. And I don't care what institution you're talking about. Whether you're talking about Harvard, you're talking about some of our fine community colleges, it doesn't matter. That bondedness to the institution, feeling part of the whole, is critical to success. It's a subtle thing. It's hard to measure, but it is certainly there. Think of when a young person, student athlete, comes to campus. They have a ready-made social network. It's their team, it's their coach. That matters. That helps them stay on campus. You probably know, but the vast majority of people in this country don't know, that student athletes graduate at a higher rate than the general student body. For the reasons I've been talking about. And it's true for every demographic area. Women graduate at much higher rates than men, and I won't explain that to you. And that goes for women athletes versus male athletes. Women athletes graduate at higher rates than women in the general population. Male athletes graduate at a higher rate than men in the general population. African-American male athletes in Division I in football, say, graduated 11% higher than African-American males in the general population. That is a big jump, as you well know. 11% graduation difference is consequential. Of course, African-American males in the general population aren't graduating at high enough rates to begin with, and not on average with the general population as a whole. So that is a problem that we all face. But within those demographic categories, student athletes do better. That's important. So, college athletics brings value to the education in terms of life skills, attitude development, the kinds of things we really want our graduates to have. So that's important. And many of our student athletes do well, but not all. We do have problem areas. I'm going to talk in a minute about the relationship between community college and four-year institutions and the transfer issues that arise there. But let me first talk about how we know all this. One of the most important steps I think the NCAA took several years ago was we're not going to pass any legislation, we're not going to make any changes on the basis of anecdote, or sports broadcasters, or anything of the kind. What we're going to do is base our decisions on sound research. And I have to say now, we have a large research department. We've hired faculties from some of the faculty members from some of the best institutions in the country in terms of psychological research, statistics, and so on. We have the best database for this group of students than any database for any group of students in the country. So we are really basing our information on very sound research. But the first thing we had to figure out is, how do we know if these students are succeeding? How do we know these young men and women are succeeding? And now, amongst friends, I should tell you, the federal way of measuring all this is wholly inaccurate. So, for example, in graduation rates at four-year institutions, the way the federal government counts graduation is they look at day one to see who's in the class, and 4 years later, they look to see who graduated. And if you're a transfer student, that includes all the students in Europe, in the colleges that come to four-year institutions, they don't count. Transfers in and out don't count. We skip them. Now, this works great if you happen to be at a small elite liberal arts college in the Northeast. For everyone else, it doesn't make any sense. If you're an urban campus, a four-year urban campus, your transfer rate is over 50%. All the community college students who come to four-year institutions and succeed, get a degree, and have been very successful, federal government doesn't count them. So we started something called the graduate success rate, which counts transfers in and out. Now, the federal government, through Secretary Spelling, has been thinking of doing that as well. They have a different approach. This is a metaphor. They want to give everyone a barcode when you're in grade school, and they want to track you individually. Unit analysis, they call it. Now, that's great if you're worried about national defense, but as an educational process, it doesn't make any sense in the world. And so we have a methodology that does it in aggregate and doesn't break the privacy of any individual. And more than once, I've been with the secretary and said, we will give you this methodology. Here, take it, apply it to the rest of the country. And we have had no takers. IBM is pushing very hard to get this unit of analysis approach done. I leave to you why that's the case. So the federal government still does not have an accurate way of counting graduation rates and transfers, but the student athletes we do, and we call that graduate success rate. And like graduation for all four-year institutions, we look not at a four-year, because you know on public universities the average is 5 years now. And so we think 6 years, according to our research, is the right measurement. After 6 years, some people do graduate, but they kind of fall off the cliff. So 6 years is the right measure. So our graduate success rate, just like the federal rate in this case, is a six-year measure. Well, it's important to have high graduation rates, and I talked to you about the value of graduation rates for student athletes versus the general student body. But you talk to a coach and say, it's a six-year race. I wasn't here. In Division I basketball, 20% of the basketball coaches change every year. I wasn't here. ADs come and go, and let me assure you, presidents come and go, too. So the people who are responsible over that 6 years are changing, so how can you hold them responsible? And that's been an excuse used by the athletic community of not holding them accountable. We don't accept your measurement. I wasn't here, president changed, the AD changed, the advisors changed. How can you hold us accountable for all that? I'm doing a good job. And so there's been a constant point of tension in the athletic community about that. So we said we need a semester by semester measure. And we developed one. We call it the APR, the Academic Performance Rate. And that is a measure of that's correlated with a six-year graduation rate. So we made up this number. You know SAT scores are made up. What is a 600 or 400? You know what that is, but it's a made-up measure. Thank you. So that's a made-up measure. So we have a measure of the two most important variables for graduation for athletes. The first is eligibility. We have certain minimum eligibility rules that apply to all cases. So you have to be eligible every semester. It's a semester by semester measurement. And you have to be retained, so you come back the next semester. So if you remain eligible and you come back and you do that for a maximum of 6 years, you graduate. This is not rocket science. And the fact of the matter is, we looked at many, many formulas. This is a very simple one, and it gets it right. And the APR is correlated to graduation rates. And we said, on our appropriate way of counting, that includes transfer students, what do you have to do semester by semester to graduate at a 60% level, which we think is very good. The Knight Commission asked for 50%. In 91, they asked, please let our student athletes graduate at 50%. We said, we'll do 60%. And so if you have an APR of a certain level, 925, then your team will graduate. Here's the key point there. We've always held student athletes accountable by their eligibility. If you don't meet certain academic standards, you can't play. Now we hold teams accountable. Division I, we give out scholarships. You all know that. And we said, the most important coin of the realm for a coach is to have scholarships available to recruit. If you don't have scholarships, you can't recruit. If you can't recruit, you can't compete. If you can't compete, you don't have a good job anymore. So scholarships are the coin of the realm. And we said, if your team doesn't do well academically, so the unit of analysis now is the team, if the team doesn't do well academically, we will withhold scholarships from that team. Therefore, making it very difficult to be successful. Every coach wants to be successful. That's why they're in the business. And that's why they're hired, to be successful. But if we take away the scholarships, it's much more difficult for them to be successful. So now we have the team as the unit of analysis in addition to the individual. And we started to do this about 4 years ago. This year we have the fourth year data. And we have seen dramatic increases. The first year or two, they didn't think we were serious. We started to take away the scholarships. And as bad as that is, the media, the press that followed that around, that this team lost some scholarships, this coach doesn't have the wherewithal for his student athletes to do well academically, that really hurts in recruiting as well, the parents, as you can imagine. So we've seen some dramatic improvement in most cases, but not in every case. Well, what happens after we've started this process and the team is still not doing well? Well, we have progressive sanctions. So we call them historical penalties. The NCAA has names for everything. And they're not using acronyms. It's very hard. But if you don't improve over a period of time, scholarship loss, we call it contemporaneous penalties, then we start to apply what we call historical penalties, meaning you have a long-term problem. So we take away more scholarships and practice time. If we still don't get their attention, starting next year, we kick you out of postseason play. Now that includes, if you're a basketball coach, it includes the Final Four tournament. If you're a football coach, it includes bowl games. And if we still don't get your attention, and by then most of the coaches who are kept out of postseason play because of academic reasons probably won't be there, but sometimes parents want to keep them there come on May, we decertify the team. Now that sounds really bad, and we've never done that. But essentially, when you decertify the team, not only is the team not permitted to compete, but every other team in that athletic department can't play in postseason play. That is very severe. It will be the worst of the worst, and we expect very few, and I hope no schools to ever face that. But by then, we've really got everyone's attention. And in fact, the president of the university, whose team is decertified, must make a personal appearance in front of our board of directors, which consists of presidents, and explain why they're not doing well academically. Can you imagine the level of embarrassment to that institution? So we're being very serious. Never before have sanctions been attached to academic poor performance, and we are changing the environment. Why is all this important to you? It tells you what's now at the core of the center of one four-year institutions, particularly Division I of thinking. 13% of our student athletes in Division I are 2 to 4 transfers, community college and four-year school transfers. 25%, in fact greater than 25%, of baseball and basketball players are 2 to 4 year transfers. So why is all this important to you? Because many of your student athletes are transferring into our programs. And the way we're continuing to do this is, if you've got a graduation rate of 90 to 95%, the likelihood of you getting much better is not going to happen. So 925 is 60% graduation rate, 1,000 is 100% graduation rate over 4 years. University of North Carolina, in 4 years, only had one student athlete who didn't graduate. Maybe they'll even win a tournament. But all four schools in the men's Final Four are above 925. The cutoff when you start to lose opportunities to participate in postseason is 900. We didn't have any in the Sweet 16 that were below 900 in APR. A few years ago, we had a bunch of them. So we're starting to see some real improvement in basketball, which is our most difficult sport in terms of graduation rate. When we look at how to raise the floor, the roof is very high already. I mean, we're not going to do much better at North Carolina. There's only one young man in 4 years who didn't graduate. Maybe he went to the pros early. That isn't our problem. Our problem is, what about the schools that are down here, in which the graduation rates are very low? How do we deal with those? The main reason they're very low is they have what we call 0-for-2s. Those are students who are neither eligible nor retained. In common parlance, they flunk out. So those student athletes who flunk out are causing these scores to go down. We want all our student athletes to succeed, and if they leave, for good reasons, they get another opportunity. Maybe they go to the pros after 1 year. That's fine. As long as they leave academically eligible, the school is not penalized. So we want them, while they're in school, to be real students. That's the key.